Well, tonight we continue our series here on the existence of God. As I have mentioned, we're using Stephen Charnock's The Existence and Attributes of God as the primary source, as well as Herman Bovink is The Doctrine of God, and some other sources as well. Charnock, as you know, died in 1680. His Existence and Attributes of God were published posthumously after his death in 1682. The philosophical enlightenment, as we said, started around 1600. So it was in his lifetime that the philosophical enlightenment was going full bore. Many atheists were making their way onto the scene of Western civilization. And this is where Stephen Charnock, in his writings, is addressing these atheists. Perhaps they're not absolute atheists, but they deny certain aspects of who God is. As we addressed in Psalm 14, verse 1, where the fool says in his heart, "There is no God." And in particular, the word is specific that he is saying that the fool says in his heart that there is no one who rules over me. God may exist, but he is not the sovereign over me and my judge. So it's a particular form of practical atheism to deny any aspect of God, as A.W. Tozer said, is the essence of idolatry, to have any thoughts of God that are other than what he is, as he has revealed himself to be in Scripture. So if we have wrong thoughts about God, we have an idol formed in our mind of who God is. The first part of his argument is on production. So he has four main arguments for the existence of God: production, harmony, ends, and preservation. We've already gone through production, dealing with bringing everything into existence, creating all things, that only a sovereign God who is infinite in power, infinite in wisdom, infinite in goodness, infinite in knowledge, could have designed it all and created it all by the sheer power of his word. And that's referred to classically as the cosmological argument for God and his existence, primarily arguing from the law of cause and effect. And the law of cause and effect is a derivative of the law of non-contradiction, that something cannot be what it is and not what it is at the same time or in the same relationship. In other words, something cannot create itself. Self-creation is a contradiction. To bring yourself into existence, you would have to then exist before you exist, to be and not to be at the same time. And that is a contradiction. It's an impossibility. So self-creation is an impossibility. You say, well, is this universe eternal? And as we looked at, Charnock is very clear on this, that what is eternal never changes. As the Westminster Shorter Catechism says, God is a spirit infinite, eternal, and unchanging in his being, wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness, and truth. Being eternal and being unchanging go together. So then everything you see that changes is not eternal. You know, by the very fact, by observing the motion of the planets, the strengthening and weakening of the sun rays at times, to the seasons, to the aging of ourselves, to the changing of the seasons on earth, to the weather changes, to all of these changes evidence that none of this is eternal. The only thing that is eternal is that which does not change. And who is that? That is God. And therefore, God is eternal, and he is the one who has created time and space and all things. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And now we're in harmony. And harmony is closely related to the next one we'll get into, ends. And then lastly will be preservation. Preservation is closely tied to production. that he who produced all things preserves all things and holds it all together by the sheer power of his almighty will. But harmony and ends are closely related. Ends is the purpose for which something exists. To look at things and see harmony and order, systems, in other words, right? That's this whole thing of harmony. And we've looked, this is review up top here. The first main heading was in the linking of contrary qualities together. So the point, again, just a reminder, his argument is that the knowledge we have of God is referred to as mediate knowledge. Mediate, it's through a medium that we know things of God. This is Romans 1:20, for example. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes, his eternal power and Godhead are clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, that medium. Through what has been made. So that men are without excuse. Through what has been made, we reason from what we observe back to who God is, his eternal power and Godhead. And in this topic of harmony, it's that question that says, is this a cosmos or is it chaos? Is it a cosmos? Is it orderly? Or is it sheer chaos? And there are some astronomers that have argued in our lifetimes that it's nothing but chaos. I think they're ostriches with their heads stuck in the sand, totally blind to what's in front of their face. That's what Romans 1:20 is saying. They're without excuse. And just because they have a PhD behind their name does not make them any smarter spiritually. He, in his day, in the 1600s, he's saying there's this linking of contrary qualities together, whether it be hot and cold or wet and dry, that in systems, God has linked contrary qualities together, which you wouldn't expect. Right? We gave the example of evaporation on one's skin. When you're real hot outside and you begin to sweat, so you've been dry and then you sweat, gets wet. Why did your skin all of a sudden get wet like that? Well, when water goes from a liquid to a gas, energy is used. So it cools you. And this is where contrary qualities work together so you don't have a heat stroke in the middle of a hot day. We see the seasons with summer and winter. Certain plants and trees need that for sprouting and growing. So many days of darkness, and etc. But there's the linking of contrary qualities together in a harmony, in a system. Number two in his argument is the subserviency of one to another. And as I mentioned, that subserviency, that was a new term in the English language of the 1600s, and it meant a subordinate place or function. That something serves something else within a system, within this interconnected network or harmony of things, of created things that God made. And he, instead of Roman numerals, I've used arrows here, but he uses subheadings under here, and we're going to look at this other one down here tonight. We've looked at the subserviency of heavenly bodies. And what does he mean there of heavenly bodies? He's referring to the sun that's shining out there right now outside the window. And the stars at night that we see in the moon. That they're subservient. They have a subordinate place or function to you and I. They were made for our eyes, and our eyes were made for them. They serve us so that we can see. We have photoreceptors in our eyes. We've talked about photosynthesis with plants. That star in our solar system, the sun that shines, is the basis of our whole food system. That sun serves the plants. It sends kinetic energy and light energy to the plants. Plants have chlorophyll. And they're able to absorb the sunlight energy during photosynthesis. And in the midst of it, take carbon dioxide out of the air, break it apart, fix the carbon into carbon-hydrogen bonds, releases oxygen that we need to breathe. But at the same time, it's taking kinetic energy from the sun, motion energy, and it's fixing it into chemical bonds, chemical energy. And how much energy is stored there, we call calories. So when we eat lettuce, for instance, it has some calories in it, and that chemical bond energy then is released. Where did that energy come from? From the sun. So the sun there is serving the plants, and through this thing called photosynthesis that God has created in the plants, it's the basis of our whole food system and provides us oxygen to breathe. But it's this networking of heavenly bodies to the earth. We've looked at the subserviency of the lower world, thinking of different interconnections in the lower world where certain food, we have certain organs to digest certain food, right? And in the lower world, there's this subserviency within ecosystems, right? Certain plants provide certain nutrients to the soil. The rich farmland that's just south of us in Renville County is the richest in the world. It's the old tall grass prairie. Right? And there's this linkage together and interconnectedness of ecosystems. I mentioned when I was at the University of Minnesota in the early 1990s, getting a degree in forest resources, that all of the federal agencies embraced an ecosystem approach because they all recognized what you have out there is interconnected harmony of things. They're ecosystems. And they were categorizing various ecosystems in nature. So when you manage something, you're managing tweaking one thing, you tweak the whole system. So there's various subserviencies in the lower world that we looked at. What's real fascinating is all of the subserviency of the creature centers in man. This fits with Genesis chapter 1 in the order of creation. God created man last. God created us in his image, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. So he created the habitat and the linkage of the heavenly bodies to the earth and the whole interconnectedness and ecosystems of earth. Created a wonderful habitat, and then he put us in the midst of that habitat. It was all meant for us. And we were granted dominion. God delegated to us dominion, Genesis 1:28, to have dominion over this creation. To have delegated dominion over all these things. To cultivate and keep it and to care for it, to manage it. But all these things tend to meet our needs. You think of all the various products that then we look at and we study, right? All of the plants for medication, right? Aspirin is from tree bark, right? I mean, they're still studying right now various, through AI technology, they're trying to go back on data we have in computer databases and try and say, hey, is there any other things we haven't thought of yet for medicines from plants? There's over 30,000 different things that are edible on planet Earth for us to eat. We've looked at the interconnectedness of the weather system, right, with us. But God is taking care of feeding the birds, right, providing water for the trees. But all of it ultimately is to make sure we've got a suitable habitat for ourselves. So tonight, we're getting into this. This order or subserviency is regular and uniform. Now, I want to say, let me just say one other thing. I have to step back one second. Is in this harmony, as we noted, Stephen Charnock, in his lifetime in the 1600s, they didn't know anything about the biochemical level, what was taking place. So you remember, I talked about and brought up Dr. Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box. Darwin's Black Box. And what we end up with is understanding that at the biochemical level, there are irreducibly complex systems that involve hundreds of parts that all have to be there at once for the system to function. And as one example that he has is when you get a skin wound, and you start bleeding, right? Well, your body, there's all sorts of enzymes that kick in and different processes that kick in. Enzymes are active proteins. And this whole process kicks in to clot, to stop the bleeding, so you don't bleed to death. But then that process has to stop as well, or you'll clot yourself to death and blood won't flow. And then it skins over and stops, right? Builds new skin. Well, that whole process is an irreducibly complex system of harmony, just like your car engine, right? Remove the radiator, one part, and what's going to happen? It's not going to function. So it's irreducible. You cannot reduce it any further. All the parts have to be there, or the system won't work. And that goes for at the biochemical level. We have systems that are extremely complex, way more than a car engine, that if you remove one thing, the whole system wouldn't function. Remember, the human body has multiple systems and they all work together as one whole body, right? This is the whole idea that the only way to explain it is that there is a wise creator that put it all together at once. There is no way in an evolution Darwinian theory to say it came one piece by one piece by one piece by one piece. Because they all have to be there at once for the whole thing to function on an irreducibly complex system. And our biological life is filled with tons of irreducibly complex systems. So in that sense, I believe harmony at the biochemical level is absolute proof, evidentiary proof that God exists. There's no way that it came about by chance. And remember, chance can do nothing. All it is describing mathematical probabilities. That's where you go to R.C. Sproul's book, Not a Chance. Not a Chance. But if you ever get a chance, read Dr. Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box. So Charnock's doing the best he can in the 1600s, right, to deal with all the arguments he can think of to say God exists. But we've even got more nowadays, the more we understand about life and the harmony of living systems. Well, tonight we're looking at then this order or subserviency is regular and uniform. It's regular and uniform is an observation that Charnock has. Now, you could say, well, here and there, there's a system that pops up. But does it disappear? This is where the idea that he's getting at is to say it's regular and uniform. We know everything changes out here, right? But also, there's unity. That's why we call it a universe. There's unity and diversity. It's not just diversity and change, but there's also unity. And this is the idea of things are regular and uniform. It's a universe because there's unity in the midst of all of the diversity and change we see. Okay? In other words, a philosophical way of stating it is there is both being and becoming. I'm a human being, and that will never change. I can never erase the fact God made me a human being. He created me in His image. I can't be a dog, a cat, or anything else. I'm a human being. A being, okay? By nature. But I'm also becoming. I've got some gray hair here in my beard. I'm changing. I'm becoming. Becoming deals with change, okay? We're both being and becoming. God is pure being. That's who God is. There's no becoming with Him. No change. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Because He's eternal. So, this order of subserviency is regular and uniform. Everything is determined to its particular nature. Everything is determined to its particular nature. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis 1. Genesis chapter 1. Just brought a couple examples here. We'll look at Genesis 1, 11, 12, and 24. Genesis 1, 11. Hear now the words of God. Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth, and it was so. Verse 12, and the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself, according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. That's on the third day, as verse 13 says. And then look at verse 24, Genesis 1:24. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. Everything is determined to its particular nature, in other words, each according to its kind. And this is this historic philosophical debate whether universal terms represent reality. So we have this difference between universal terms and particular terms. Universal terms and particular terms. I am a man. A man. I'm a particular man. But as I said, I'm a human being. After a certain kind of creature I am. Okay? This is when we say man. God created man in his own image, male and female. This man there is a universal term representing our kind, and it fits every one of us who's a particular human being. They're the same as cats, right? You have different types of cats. But we have, you know in your mind, right? What's the difference between a cat and a dog? Right? You just look and you say, oh, I don't care what shapes they're in, right? They're different. Some are fatter than others, some are skinnier than others, some are taller than others, some are shorter than others. Okay. But you know the difference. You just, boom, one kind, a different kind. Cat, dog. Where do we get this? These are universals. And the Bible is telling us that these universal terms are real and represent reality. There are those among unbelievers, unbelieving philosophers who say universal terms are man-made arbitrary things. And the only things that are real are particular terms that describe particular things. And it's very important. It's a deeper thing to think about, but it's an important thing to think about, is that everything is determined to its particular nature. Why do cats behave a certain way? Because they're of a certain kind of creature. Why do human beings tend to have, we have reason, right? We have human reason. We tend to ponder things like we're pondering tonight. Why? Because God created us in His image. We're acting after our kind. But that's telling us that things are regular and uniform. Let me put it to you in a very blunt way, okay? Rush Dooney, in his book on the Old Testament Mosaic Law, he talks about paganism and bestiality, when human beings have sex with animals. That's happened in pagan societies. Why is it common in pagan societies? Because they don't understand that everything is after its own kind. There's the meshing and blending of all things into one in paganism. And this is the ridiculousness and foolishness of the world we live in right now, of transgenderism, where men think that they're women and women think they're men. And remember, I saw in the news a couple months ago where there was one woman who claimed she was a cat and crawled around the ground like a cat and behaved like a cat. And you're like, why do they think like this? We're human beings, we're not cats, right? And when God made us, he made us a certain way. I'm a man, not a woman, right? God created us in his image, male and female. This is of our kind. But to understand that God, who is over all things, created everything after its kind. So when we categorize things in science, where if you've been in horticulture or science, you know there's kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. I remember when I went through in forestry at the University of Minnesota, and we had to memorize all the Latin terms of the genus and species of the trees, because it helps you connect them with the genus and species of every tree. Why? How can we do that? Is it arbitrary? Is it man-made? Are we imposing a structure on a chaotic world that has no order? That's what the pagans are saying. We're saying, no, we are recognizing with our rational minds what we see, that God created everything with a particular order, and it is regular and uniform, and everything is determined to its particular nature. Maple trees are a certain way, different than oak trees. Blueberry bushes are different. Daylilies are different than hostas. Human beings are different than cats and dogs. I mean, you feel like you're stating the obvious, but we live in a world that we have to share with them, saying, hey, this is what's reality, and truth is what corresponds to reality. Which is why then, I'll just one added thought, which is why, since the Mosaic Law under Moses criminalized bestiality, and it was worthy of the death penalty. Everything is determined to its particular season as well. Not just its particular nature, but its particular season. Go to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. That's this great section, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, 1 through 8. And a lot of it is dealing with sociology, the behavior of humans as well. But I just want to focus on the first two verses. Ecclesiastes 3, 1 and 2. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. And then goes on to describe all sorts of different things for that occur in life under the sun. But everything is determined to its particular season. There's a particular time, right, where farmers plant, right? We've got our garden out here. Do you want to plant in September in Minnesota? Put your corn down and green beans in September? Huh? No, of course not, right? Well, everybody knows that everything's determined to its particular season. We've just been harvesting the apples, right? There's a season for all these things. Everything is regular, so there's change taking place, right? The trees are growing, right? There's plants that grow and then they wither and they dry up and they're done for the season, right? But they bore fruit in the midst of it all. But there's change taking place. This is the diversity and change of everything. But in the midst of it, there's unity. Things are regular and uniform, with each in its particular nature, with cats and dogs, and you think of bears. When do they go in hibernation in a particular season? You have the migration of animals in particular seasons, right? Where the monarch butterflies will go all the way from Mexico on up way to the northeast to North America. There's certain hummingbirds that are real small that'll go from Mexico all the way up to Alaska with the seasons. Why is it that you can have, I worked in Alaska in the U.S. Forest Service a couple seasons. Why is it, you know, I helped them at times, they were trying to use GPS to map all of the little streams where the salmon would spawn. And some of them are very, very small streams. And I assisted with some of that in the early 1990s. But you have salmon that'll go from one little stream in Southeast Alaska and then swim across the Pacific Ocean in the midst of the whole season and somehow come back to that very same stream to lay eggs and then die. At a particular time, at a particular season. Within all the change, there is regular and uniform behavior among the creatures. Everything being determined according to its particular nature, and everything is determined to its particular season. We're standing here in the midst of it all and seeing it with our eyes by the things that have been made. This is again where R.C. Sproul said, every blade of grass whispers in your ear, I have a creator. I have a creator. Here, everything of harmony working together is whispering in our ears, I have a creator. I have a creator. So Charnock, I've got a quote here by Charnock. Charnock says this, quote, all things have their seasons of flourishing, budding, blossoming, bringing forth fruit. They ripen in their seasons, cast their leaves at the same time, throw off their old clothes, and in the spring appear with new garments, but still in the same fashion, unquote. I love that last line, still in the same fashion. You know, another story. When I worked in Wyoming, when I was in Du Bois, Wyoming, I was in a one-by trailer. And for a while there in the U.S. Forest Service, I had a roommate. He was a Native American Indian. He was a Shoshone. The Shoshone National Forest is what we were in, and their Indian reservation was nearby. Well, he had worked as a smoke jumper, fighting forest fires in the U.S. Forest Service. But his hobby was to go out and collect elk antlers in the woods that had fallen off the heads, right? And then he would sell them to entities that would do things with them for the tourists. But that was his hobby, right? But here again, right? All of this stuff within to their particular nature, according to their particular season, and everything taking place according to rhythm. I'll read that again. All things have their seasons of flourishing, budding, blossoming, bringing forth fruit. They ripen in their seasons, cast their leaves off at the same time, throw off their old clothes, and in the spring appear with new garments, but still in the same fashion. Unquote. Only God, an infinite, intelligent being, can be behind it. This regularity of plants and animals is in all the nations, is one thing that Charnock notes. No matter what continent you're on, there is a regularity and a uniformity to the seasons. It's not just special to North America, right? You have the same thing even with seasons in Burma. You have a monsoon season, right? Wet season and a dry season. Charnock says this is the quote, can mere nature be the cause of those musical proportions of time? Unquote. It's like an orchestra. As I said, we have the different groups in the orchestra playing all together in harmony in a system. Can mere nature be the cause of those musical proportions of time? Remember, music is mathematical. This is regular and uniform. It's mathematical. Do you know, I remember studying in horticulture and in forestry, they know some of the trees that need dormancy, how many days they need. It's all mathematical. It's amazing. Within the midst of the diversity you see, great uniformity and regularity. Charnock wrote this, quote, "You may as well conceive a lute to sound its own strings," like a guitar. You may as well conceive a lute to sound its own strings without the hand of an artist, without the musician. A city well governed without a governor. An army keep its stations without a general. As imagined, so exact an order without an order." Unquote. I'll read it again. "You may as well conceive a lute to sound its own strings without the hand of an artist. A city well governed without a governor. An army keep its stations without a general. As imagined, so exact an order without an order." Unquote. I put 1 Corinthians 14:33 here. God's not a God of chaos. He's a God of order. In the New King James, it says this, "For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints." But that word for peace can be translated from the Greek order. Order. "For God is not the author of confusion, but of order." He's of order, of peace. Isn't that what we see? I put Genesis 1 here. You read carefully through. I'm not going to take the time to do it, but you read carefully through what God is doing in day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6. There's a particular order to it. Go to Genesis 8, 22. After the worldwide flood, the words of God, "Well, the earth remains seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease." There's order and harmony. And the linking together of contrary qualities, as you see. Everything determined to its particular nature, everything determined to its particular season. He's got another one, that this order and subserviency is constant. It's constant. Charnock says this, quote, "In the world, all things consist as they were created at the beginning. The law of nature in the creatures has met no change." Read it again. "In the world, all things consist as they were created at the beginning. The law of nature in the creatures has met no change." Cats are still cats. Dogs are still dogs. Human beings are still human beings. Bears are still bears. Cattle are still cattle. If there's any change, it's what we would call, in as scientists who believe in creationism, we say, it's microevolution. There is change within a kind. Within a kind. So you have different kinds of cattle, but they're still cattle. You have different kinds of cats, but they're still cats. You have different kinds of dogs, but they're still dogs. And this is what he's getting at here, is in the world, all things consist as they were created at the beginning. The law of nature in the creatures has met no change. Read it at one of our other evenings, Job 38 and 39. This is where God spoke to Job and told him to be a scientist, to go to creation. But God goes and describes all of these various creatures and their behaviors. When you look at those sections in Job 38 and 39, like just for fun there, look at Job 39 verse 1. "Do you know the time?" This is God speaking to Job. "Do you know the time when the wild mountain goats bear young? Or can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time when they bear young? They bow down, they bring forth their young, they deliver their offspring, their young ones are healthy, they grow strong with grain, they depart and do not return to them." And this is where he goes on and he talks about various creatures and how they behave according to their nature. According to their kind. Charnock says this, quote, "In all ages, in all places, every year it performs the same task, spins out fruit of the same color, taste, virtue, to refresh the several creatures for which they are provided. Unquote. Read it again. In all ages, in all places, every year it performs the same task, spins out fruit of the same color, taste, virtue, to refresh the several creatures for which they are provided. That's apple trees bearing apples. Prune trees bearing prunes. Down in Florida, orange trees bearing oranges. I remember I had one forestry job down there in Florida. I remember coming across in the woods an orange tree. I thought, oh, this is unique. I come across a wild orange tree in the middle of nowhere. They had some palm trees, too. I was further enough south to have wild palm trees. And there's constant behavior. He says this, ordered and settled constant state of things comes from God, who laid the foundations of the earth so that it should not be moved forever. Psalm 104, verse 5. We looked at quite a few verses last time we met on Psalm 104. Think from Job, a little bit from Job here, that God set ordinances and statutes over creation as if they have a covenant with their Creator. Look at Job 38:33 first. Again, God speaking to Job. Job 38:33. Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? So God set certain ordinances and statutes over creation. Remember, it was Johannes Kepler, an astronomer in the 17th century, Christian, who believed studying creation were thinking God's thoughts after him. We're thinking God's thoughts after him. We're discovering his ordinances over creation. So when Newton discovered gravity, what? He's discovering a law of gravity, certain ordinance of God that's been established, that determines the motions of the planets and the stars. It's as if they have a covenant with their Creator. Jeremiah 33:20. Jeremiah 33:20. Thus says the Lord, if you can break my covenant with the day and my covenant with the night, so that there will not be day and night in their season, then my covenant may also be broken with David, my servant. See that in Jeremiah 33:20. So all of the ordinances that God has set up with creation, with day and night and the seasons, etc., and the regularity and constancy, is if God has a covenant with creation. Jeremiah 33:20. And that cannot be broken any more than his covenant with David, the Davidic covenant. The next one here. The order and harmony of creation is as the order and harmony of a building. It's as the order and harmony of a building. It has a foundation. Look at Job 38:4. God told Job, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Foundation. Now with various measurements. Verse 5, who determines its measurements? Surely you know, or who stretched the line upon it? And there's a cornerstone. Look at Job 38, verse 6. To what were its foundations fastened, or who laid its cornerstone? And the sea has bars and doors. Look at Job 38, 8 and 10. Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? And verse 10, when I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors. It's intelligence that builds a building. It's wisdom in a mind and an architect that designs it. And God is saying, I am the one who designed all things. I designed the universe. It's as if it's a building with a foundation, with measurements, with doors, and a cornerstone. With buildings, there's harmony. There's proportion. It's part of the beauty of architecture. As many of you know, modern art, modern architecture tries to be nothing but chaos. Just throw paint at the wall. You've seen it. That's their worldview. The universe is nothing but chaos. And they're showing it in their art, or perhaps in how they've designed a weird building. It's their worldview trying to say, it comes out of their worldview of the pagan worldview that says it's all chaos, no order and structure and harmony. Francis Schaeffer, in his book, The God Who Is There, talks about one of these pagans that believed that the universe is not a universe. It's just verse. It's just chaos and diversity and change. It's all it is. So what this person did is they devised a device that would conduct music, but totally at random. Think about that a minute. Right? Normally with an orchestra, right, you've got a conductor. Telling everyone in their various parts when to, right? So this person, though, believed in total chaos. And literally what this person did is devised a device that would move totally at random. Be chaotic. And then people would sit back and try and listen to it, and it was nothing but chaos. How absurd. How meaningless. Again, our world is rational. There is such as truth and falsehood, good and evil. There is structure and order to all things. There is unity and regularity to all things, even though things are changing. Everything is created after its kind, and everything functions according to seasons. So for us as creatures, there is both being and becoming, in other words. But there's always order, there's being. So one of the questions is, do you hear the orchestra playing? We live in God's theater, as John Calvin said. We live in God's theater. Do you hear his orchestra playing, the harmony? Do you observe it? Step back and observe it and think about it when you're planting your seeds in the spring and going to harvest it in the fall. And you're watching the ducks and the geese migrate. And other creatures, according to seasons. And the leaves fall off according to their season. Romans 1, 20 and 21 says that since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes, his eternal power and Godhead are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, so that men are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. What we ought to do is honor God and give thanks for this great harmony that we see. I've included these, I think, in a prior one, but I wanted to reiterate it again. Hermann Bovink, he died 1921, same year as the death of B.B. Warfield. The great Dutch theologian Herman Bovink, he wrote this, quote, "The laws of thought are the same for all. Mathematics is everywhere the same." I don't care if you're in the middle of the Burmese jungle, 1 + 1 = 2. Right? Doesn't matter where you are. 1 + 1 = 2. 2 × 2 = 4. 8 / 4 = 2. Multiplication, division, addition, I don't care what it is. As Bovink says, the laws of thought are the same for all. Mathematics is everywhere the same. The laws of thought, logic, is mathematical. Math is symbolic logic. In other words, the universe is rational. It's rational. So, this is what Bovink says, quote, "The ability to know is innate," unquote. Bovink says this, quote, "Every individual in the normal course of development must arrive at the knowledge of God," unquote. That's what Romans 1, 20 and 21 is saying. Everyone is without excuse. In the normal course of development, we must arrive at the knowledge of God. In other words, the little baby back there doesn't yet have a rational mind. But it will grow up. And when it grows up, it will become rational and begin to think logically. And will begin to point it at the parents and say, "But you said this, you know, whatever, a little bit ago, you know," and think in terms of the logical law of non-contradiction. "But you told me this different a week ago," right? They're thinking logically, right? If something contradicts itself. This is where children get, right? 13, 14 years old, they're developing a rational human mind. And we begin to think in the terms of the law of cause and effect. And the point is, then, the ability to know is innate. That when we look out and observe the things that have been made, we see the harmony, the regularity and uniformity of all created things and the constancy of all created things. What is our conclusion? Only an infinite, eternal, all-wise, all-knowing being could have designed it all. Bovink said, "It is God himself who does not leave any man without witness," unquote. Everyone is without excuse if they do not honor God and give thanks as creator of all things. Because he's given himself witness, not just in the production of all things that we pondered already, but in the harmony of all things. And we're going to look at it, the ends of all things, as well as the preservation of all things. It's all around us. His thesis is that it is foolish to deny what all created things manifest. Psalm 14:1. That's the essence as well as Romans 1. "Professing to be wise, they became fools and worshiped the creature rather than the creator." I've said it before, I'll say it again, this is in the realm of apologetics. From 1 Peter 3:15, apologia in the Greek is the word that we get apologetic from, which means giving a defense, not an apology. "Oh, I'm sorry." No, it's apologetics is giving a defense. We're affirming rational reasons, evidence to say God exists. And we ought to honor him and worship him as the true and living God. These are arguments not only to present to unbelievers, and we have many different shades of them in our society, both of the atheistic variety, the agnostic variety, the neo-pagan variety of the Hindu and the Buddhist, they're all around us. And we have to present to them that God is both infinite, all-wise, all-knowing, all-powerful. He's infinite. This is the idea. He created all things. But he's also personal. He's personal. He loves. He wants a loving relationship with us. He relates to us. He speaks. This idea of being personal. And remember, I've said on the Sunday morning sermons, this is from Francis Schaeffer, the false gods of the West, think of ancient Greece, the Roman Empire, and the Germanic tribes of Europe, the false gods of the West say that God is personal. If there's a divine being, he's personal, but not infinite. And this is why the ancient Greeks and Romans had many, many false gods. They're polytheists. They had the false goddess Diana, they had Zeus, Hermes, and all sorts of false gods. But their false gods were personal, but not infinite. And remember, the false gods of the East, that's Hinduism and Buddhism, says that if there's a divine being, the divine being is infinite, but not personal. And that's why they look at, like, feel the force, Luke, just an energy force. But that's Hinduism and Buddhism, and that if there is a divine being, it's not personal, just infinite. And that's where they get pantheism. They worship the trees and the rocks as if God is all things. God is, all is one to them. All is one. And what we present is that he is both infinite and personal. That's the witness of Holy Scripture. God is both infinite and personal. We know he's infinite. These are the reasons for the existence of God, but he's also personal. He speaks. He speaks to us in Scripture. So these are arguments to present outside to the unbeliever, but they're also what strengthen our faith. Strengthen our faith. You remember, we've said it before, but on Isaiah chapter 40, which is one of my most favorite chapters in Scripture, Dr. Eric Alexander said that the Old Testament saints fed their faith on the doctrine of creation. You read that last half of Isaiah chapter 40, and it's all on the greatness of God as creator of all and sovereign of all, and personally relating with everything. But as the creator of all, and they fed their faith on the doctrine of creation to say, this is the God who we worship and serve and who loves us in Christ. He exists, he's there, and he speaks. So, Lord willing, the next time we meet, we're going to look at another broad argument he has. What he refers to as number three is the admirable variety and diversity of all things in the world. And then hopefully we'll end with the harmony section at that point the next time we meet, Lord willing.